The drinking had started in the Bucket in Gleam Street. This was the Coppers pub. Mr. Cheese, the owner, understood about coppers. They liked to drink somewhere where they wouldn't see anything that reminded them they were coppers. Fun was not encouraged. It was Tawny who suggested that they move to Thank Gods It's Open. Angle wasn't really in the mood, but she hadn't the heart to say no. The plain fact was that while Tawny had a body that every other woman should hate her for, she compounded the insult by actually being very likable. This was because she had the self-esteem of a caterpillar, and, as you found out after any kind of conversation with her, about the same amount of brain. Perhaps it all balanced out. Perhaps some kindly god had said to her, "Sorry, kid, you're going to be thicker than a yard of lard. But the good news is, that's not going to matter." And she had a stomach made of iron, too. Angle found herself wondering how many hopeful men had died trying to drink her under the table. Alcohol didn't seem to go to her brain at all. Maybe it couldn't find it. But she was pleasant, easygoing company. If you avoided allusion, irony, sarcasm, repartee, satire, and words longer than chicken. Angua was touchy because she was dying for a beer. But the young man behind the bar thought that a pint of Winkles was the name of a cocktail. Given the drinks on offer, perhaps this was not surprising. "What?" said Angua, reading the menu. "Is a screaming orgasm." "Ah," said Sally. "Looks like we got to you just in time, girl." "No," sighed Angua, as the others laughed. This was such a vampire response. "I mean, what's it made of?" "Almonte, Walulu, Bear Huggers, Whiskey, Cream, and Vodka," said Tawny, who knew the recipe for every cocktail ever made. "And how does it work?" said Sherry, craning to see over the top of the bar. Sally ordered 4 and turned back to Tawny. "So, you and Nobby Nobs, eh?" she said. "How about that? 3 sets of ears flared." The other thing you got used to in the presence of Tawny was silence. Everywhere she went quiet. Oh, and the stairs. The silent stairs, and sometimes, in the shadows, a sigh. There were goddesses who'd kill to look like Tawny. "He's nice," said Tawny. "He makes me laugh, and he keeps his hands to himself." 3 faces locked in expressions of concentrated thought. In Angwell's case, one was... This is Nobby we're talking about. There are so many questions that we are not going to ask. "Has he shown you the tricks he can do with his spots?" she said. "Yes, I thought I'd whittle myself. He's so funny." Angela stared into her drink. Sherry coughed. Sally studied the menu. "And he's very dependable," said Tawny. And as if dimly aware that this was still not sufficient, she added sadly, "If you must know, he's the first boy who's ever asked me out." Sally and Angua breathed out together. Light dawned. Ah, that was the problem. And this one's a bad case. "I mean, my hair's all over the place, my legs are too long, and I know my bosom is far too..." Tawny went on, but Sally had raised a quietening hand. "First point, Tawny." "My real name's Betty," said Tawny, blowing a nose so exquisite that the greatest sculptor in the world would have wept to carve it. It went blort. "First point, then, Betty," Sally managed, struggling to use the name, "is that no woman under 45, 50, Angwa corrected, right, 50, no woman under 50 uses the word bosom to name anything connected to her. You just don't do it." "I didn't know that," Tawny sniffed. "It's a fact," said Angua. "And, oh dear, how to begin to explain the jerk syndrome? To someone like Tawny, on whom the name Betty stuck like rocks to a ceiling." This wasn't just a case of the jerk syndrome. This was it. The quintessential, classic, pure platonic example that should be stuffed and mounted and preserved as a teaching aid for students in the centuries to come. And she was happy with Nobby. "What I've got to tell you now is," she began, and faded in the face of the task, "is, look, shall we have another drink? What's the next cocktail on the menu? Sherry peered at it. Pink, big, and wobbly, she announced. Classy. We'll have four. Fred Coleman peered through the bars. He was, on the whole, a pretty good jailer. He always had a pot of tea on the go. He was, as a general rule, amiably disposed to most people. He was too slow to be easily fooled, and he kept the cell keys and a tin box in the bottom drawer on his desk, a long way out of reach of any stick, hand, dog, cunningly thrown belt, or trained Clatchian monkey spider. Making Fred Coleman possibly unique in the annals of jail history. He was a bit worried about this dwarf. You got all sorts in jail, and they often yelled a bit. But with this one, he didn't know what was worse, the sobbing or the silence. He put one candlestick on a stool by the bars, too, because the dwarf carried on alarmingly if there wasn't enough light. He stirred the tea reflectively and handed the mug to Nobby. "We've got a rum in here, I reckon," he said. "A dwarf that's scared of the dark. Not ready to have it." "Wouldn't touch his tea biscuit. What do you think?"
"I think I'll have his biscuit," said Nobby, reaching over to the plate.
"Why are you down here anyway?" said Fred. "I'm surprised you ain't out there ogling a young woman.
Tunny's going out boozing with the girls tonight," said Nobby.
"Ah, you want to warn her about that sort of thing," said Fred Coleman. "You know what it's like in the center when the pubs and clubs empty. There's throwing up and yelling and unladylike behavior and taking their vests off, and I don't know what it's called." He scratched his head. "Men's drinking.
She's only gone out with Anguan, Sally, and Sherry, Sarge," said Nobby, taking another biscuit.
"Ooh, you want to watch that, Nobby. Women ganging up on man." Fred paused. "A vampire and a werewolf out on the razzle? Take my tip, lad. Stay indoors tonight. And if they start behaving and..." He stopped as the sound of Sandvine's voice came down the spiral stone steps, followed closely by its owner. "So, I've got to stop them forming a block, right?"
"If you're playing the troll side, yes," said the new voice. "A tight group of dwarfs is bad news for trolls."
"Trolls shove, dwarfs throw?"
"Right.
And the central rock, no one can drop that, right?" said Vimes.
"Yes.
I still think the dwarfs have it all their own way."
"We shall see. The important thing..." Vimes stopped when he saw Nobby and Colin.
"Okay, lads, I'll talk to the prisoner now," he said. "How is he?"
Fred indicated the hunched figure on the narrow bank in the corner cell.
Captain Carrot tried talking to him for nearly half an hour. "And you know he's got away with people," he said.
"Didn't get as much as a sentence out of him. I read his rights, but don't ask me if he understood them. He didn't want his tea and biscuit at any rate. That's rights 5 and 5B, he added, looking bashful sin up and down.
"He gets rights 5C only if we've got tea time assortment."
"Can he walk?" said Vimes.
He sort of shuffles, sir."
"Fetch him out, then," said Vimes.
And seeing Fred's inquiring look at Bashfulson, he went on, "This gentleman is here to make sure we don't use the rubber truncheon, Sergeant."
"Didn't know we had one, Mr. Vimes," said Fred.
"We haven't," said Vimes. "No point in hitting him with something that bounces, eh?" He added, looking at Bashfulson, who smiled once again, his strange little smile. One candle burned on the table. For some reason, Fred had seen fit to put another one on a stool near the one occupied cell.
"It's a bit dark in here, Fred," said Vimes, as he pushed aside the debris of mugs and old newspapers that covered most of the table.
"Yes, sir. The dwarfs came and nicked some of our candles to put round their heath."
That nasty sign," said Fred, with a nervous look at Bashfulson.
"Sorry, sir.
I don't know why we can't just burn it, grumbled Vimes, setting out the thud board. That would be dangerous, now that the summoning dark is in the world, said Ashfulson. You believe in that stuff, said Vimes?
Believe? No, said the Grag. I just know it exists. The troll pieces go all around the central stone, sir, he added helpfully. Populating the board with his little warriors took some time, but so did the arrival of Helm Clever, with Fred Colin steering him gently by a shoulder. He walked it like someone in a dream. His eyes turned up so that they mostly showed the whites.
His iron boots scraped on the flagstones. Fred pushed him gently into a chair and put the second candle beside him. Like magic, the dwarf's eyes focused on the little stone armies, so to the exclusion of everything else in the jail.
We're playing a game, Mr. Helmclover, said Vimes quietly, and you can choose your side. Helmclover reached out with a trembling hand and touched a piece, a troll. A dwarf had chosen to play as the trolls.
Vimes gave the hovering Bashfulson a questioning glance, and got another smile in return.
Okay, you got as many of the little sods as possible in a defensive huddle, right?
Vimes's hand hesitated and shifted a dwarf across the board. The click as he placed it was echoed by the one made by the movement of Helmclover's next troll. The dwarf looked sleepy, but his hand had moved with snake speed.
Who killed the four mining dwarfs, Helmclover? Said Vimes softly.
Who killed the boys from the city?
Dull eyes looked at him, and then meaningfully at the board.
Vimes moved a dwarf at random.
The dark soldiers, Helmclover whispered, as a little troll clicked smartly into place.
Who ordered it? Again, the look. Again, a dwarf piece placed at random, followed by a troll that was moved so fast that the two pieces seemed to hit the board together.
Grag Hamcrusher ordered it.
Why?
Click, click.
They had heard it speaking.
What was it that spoke?
Was it a cube?
Click, click.
Yes, it was dug up.
It said it spoke with the voice of Baring Bloodaxe.
Vimes heard a gasp from Bashfulson.
And caught Fred Colin's eye. He jerked his head toward the cell block door and mouthed a couple of words.
Wasn't he a famous dwarf king? Said Vimes.
Click, click. Yes, yeah. He commanded the dwarfs at Coombe Valley, said Helmclover.
And what did this voice say? Said Vimes.
Click, click. And a third click from behind Vimes as Fred Colin locked the door and stood in front of it, looking impassive.
I do not know, Ardent said.
Ardent said was about the battle. He said it was lies.
Who killed Grog Hamcrusher?
Click, click.
I do not know.
Ardent calls me to the meeting and said there was terrible fighting among the Grags.
Ardent said one of them killed him in the dark with a mining hammer. But none knew who. They were all struggling together.
All dressed alike, Vimes thought. Just shapes. If you can't see their wrists.
Why did you want to kill him?
Click, click. They had to stop him destroying the words.
He was screaming and hitting the cube with the hammer.
There are sensitive areas on a cube, and it is possible that if they are touched in the wrong order, all the sound will vanish, whispered Bashelson.
I should think the hammer would do the trick, whatever it hit, said Vimes, turning his head.
No, Commander, devices are immensely tough.
They must be.
Vimes turned back to Helmclover.
It's wrong to destroy lies. It's okay to kill them, is? He said.
Click. He heard the hiss of Bashfulson's intake of breath.
Well, yes. Perhaps that could have been better put.
There was no answer moving Helmclover's... No answering move. Helmclover hung his head.
It was wrong to kill the miners, he said. He whispered. And why not destroy lies? But it is wrong to think these thoughts. So I said nothing. The old grogs were angry and upset and confused. So Arden took charge. He said one dwarf killed another underground. Everyone knew that was no business of humans. He said he could make it all right. He said everyone must listen to him. He told the dark guards to take the body to the new outer chamber. And he told me to fetch my club.
Vimes glanced at Bashful Sin and mouthed the word club. He got an emphatic nod in return. Helmclover sat hunched in silence, and then raised one hand slowly and moved a troll. Click. Click, click. Click, click. Click, click.
Vimes tried to spare a few brain cells for the game, while his mind raced and tried to piece the random information spilling out of Helmclover. So, it all starts when they come here looking for this magic cube, which can speak. Why did they come to the city? How did they know the cube was here? Click, click. When I went to begin my training, I took a copy of the Codex. Arden confiscated it. But then they called me to a meeting and said it was very important, and they would honor me by letting me go with them to the city. Arden told me it was a great opportunity. Grag Hamcrusher had a mission, he said. They hadn't even known about the painting. They live under a mountain. They believe that humans are not real. But Ardent is smart. He said there were always rumors that something had come out of King Valley. I bet he is smart, Vimes thought. So they come here, do a little light pastoral work, and rabble-rousing, and search for the cube in a very dwarfish way. They find it. But the poor bastards who were doing the digging hear what it's got to say. Well, everyone knows dwarfs gossip. So the dark guards make sure that these four don't have a chance to. Click, click. Click, click. Then friend Hamcrusher doesn't like what he hears either. He wants to destroy this thing. In the struggle in the dark, one of the other Grags does the world a favor and fetches him a crack on the noggin. But, whoops. Big mistake, because the mob is going to miss him and his jolly urging to wholesale troll slaughter. You know how dwarfs gossip, and you can't kill them all. So while it's still just us together in the dark, we need a plan. Forward, Mr. Arden, who says, I know. We'll take the corpse out to a tunnel that a troll just might have got into, and bash its head in with a club. A troll did it. What right-thinking dwarf could possibly believe anything else? Click, click. Why the candles, said Vimes. The old Grags have been sitting in brilliant candlelight when I saw them. Click, click. The Grags ordered it, Helmclover whispered. They feared what might come for them in darkness. And what was it that might come? Click. Helmclover's hand stopped in midair. For several seconds, nothing moved in the little circle of yellow light except the candle flames themselves. In the darkness beyond, the shadows craned to hear. I cannot say, whispered the dwarf. Click. Click, click. 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 Vimes glared at the board. Where'd that troll come from? Helmclover had wiped three dwarfs off the board in one go. Arden said there's always a troll. A troll got into the mine, said Helmclover. The Grags said, yes, that must have been it. But they knew the truth. Click, 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 click. Three more dwarfs gone, just like that. Truth is what a Grag says it is, said Helmclover. The sunlight world is a bad dream, anyway. Arden said no one was to speak about it. He said I was to tell all the guards about the troll. Blame it on a troll, Vimes thought. For a dwarf, that came naturally. A big troll did it, and ran away. This isn't just a can of worms, it's a nest of bloody vipers. He stared at the board. Bloody hell, I'm running into a wall here. What am I left with? Brick saw a dwarf hitting another dwarf. But that wasn't murder. It wasn't the murder. That was Ardent or someone giving Hamcrusher's dead body that distinctive, bashed by a troll look. I'm not actually certain that's a major crime. The murder was done in the dark by one of six dwarfs, and the other five might not even know who did it. Okay, maybe I can say they conspired to conceal a crime. Hold on. But it wasn't Ardent who said that the watch should not be told, he said. That was you, wasn't it? Did you want me to be angry, Mr. Helmclover? He moved a dwarf. Click. Helmclover looked down. Since no answer was forthcoming, Vimes captured the wandering troll and placed it beside the board. I did not think you would come, Helmclover's voice was barely audible. Hamcrusher was, I think, I didn't... Ardent said you wouldn't worry because the Grag was such a danger. He said the Grag had ordered the miners to be killed, and so now it was ended. But I thought it wasn't right. Things were wrong. I heard you were full of pride. I had to get you interested. You thought I wouldn't be? A troll is accused of murdering a dwarf at a time like this, and I wouldn't be interested, said Vimes. Ardent said that you would not be, because no humans were involved. He said you would not care what happens to dwarfs. He ought to get out in the fresh air more. Helmclover's eyes and nose were running now and dripping on the board. A storm stops the battle, Vimes thought. Then the dwarf lifted his head and wailed. It was the club the troll Mr. Shine gave me for winning 5 games in a row, he wailed. He was my friend. He said I was as good as a troll, so I should have a club. I told Ardent it was a war trophy, but he took it and bashed the poor dead body. Water dripping on a stone, Vimes thought, and it depends on where the drops fall, right? Mr. Shine, what good has it done, this poor devil? He wasn't in the right job to have doubt enter his life. All right, Mr. Helmclover. Thank you for this, he said, sitting back. There is just one thing, though. Do you know who sent those dwarfs to my house? What dwarfs? Vimes stared into the weeping red-rimmed eyes. Their owner was either telling the truth or the stage had missed a major talent. They came to attack me and my family, he said. I did hear Ardent talking to the captain of the guard, Helmclover murmured. Something about a warning. A warning, do you call it? Vimes began and stopped when he saw Bashful Son shaking his head. Right, right. No point in talking it out on this one. He had all the stuffing knocked out of him in any case. They are very frightened now, Helmclover said. They don't understand the city. They don't understand why trolls are allowed here. They don't understand people who don't understand them. They fear you. They fear everything. Now, where have they gone? I don't know, Ardent said. They would have gone now anyway, because they've got the cube and the painting, said Helmclover. He said the painting will show where there are more lies, and those can be destroyed. But they fear most of all the summoning dark, Commander. They can feel it coming for them. It's only a drawing, said Vimes. I don't believe in it. I do, said Helmclover calmly. It is in this room. How does it come? It comes in darkness, and in vengeance, and in disguise. Vimes felt his skin twitch. Nobby looked around the grimy stone walls. Bashfulson sat bolt upright in his chair. Even Fred Colin shifted uneasily. This is just mystic stuff, Vimes told himself. It's not even human mystic stuff. I don't believe in it. So why does it feel a bit chilly in here? He coughed. Well, once it knows they've gone, I expect it'll head out after them. And it will come for me, said Helmclover. In the same calm voice. He folded his hands in front of him. Why? You didn't kill anybody, said Vimes. You don't understand. When they killed the miners, one was not all the way dead, and... You could hear him hammering on the door with his fists, and I stood in the tunnel and listened to him die. And I wished him dead so that the noise would stop, but when it did, it went on in my head. And I could have turned the wheel, but I was afraid of the dark guards who have no souls. And because of that, the darkness will take mine. The little voice died away. There was a nervous cough from Nobby. Well, thank you again, said Mimes. Good grief, they really messed up his head, poor little sod. And I've got nothing, he thought. I might get Ardent on a charge of falsifying evidence. I can't put Brick in the witness box, because I'll simply be proving that there was a troll in the mine. And all I've got is young Helmclover here, who's clearly unfit to testify. He turned to Bashfulson and shrugged. I think I'd like to keep our friend here tonight, for his own good. I can't imagine there's anywhere else for him to go. The statement he made is, of course, covered by... Now his voice trailed off as his memory nudged him. He turned back in his chair to glare at the sorrowful Helmclover. What painting? The painting of the Battle of Coombe Valley by Methodia Rascal, said the dwarf, not looking up. It's very big. They stole it from the museum. What? Said Fred Cullen, who's making tea in the corner. It was them. What? You know about this, Fred? Vimes demanded. Yes, Mr. Vimes. We did a report. Coombe Valley, Coombe Valley, Coombe Valley, roared Vimes, slapping his hand down on the table so hard that the candlesticks jumped into the air. A report? What the hell good's a report? Have I got time these days to read reports? Why doesn't someone tell me these things? One candlestick rolled onto the floor and went out. Vimes grabbed for the other as it reached the edge of the table, but it spun away from his fingers and landed wick-first on the flagstones. Darkness fell like an axe. Helmclover groaned. It was a heartfelt, soul-creaking groan, like a death rattle from a living mouth. Nobby, screamed Vimes, light a goddamn match right now, and that's a goddamn order. There was a frantic scrabbling in the dark, and then a match head was a sudden supernova. Well, bring it here, man, he shouted to Nobby. Get those candles lit. Helmclover was still staring at the table, where the ill-tempered thump had scattered the remains of the game. Vimes glanced down at the game port as the candle flames grew. If you were the kind to see things, you'd say that the trolls and dwarfs had fallen in a rough circle around the central rock, while a few more dwarfs had rolled away in a line. You'd say, in fact, that from above they formed the shape of a round eye with a tail. Helmclover gave a little sigh and slipped sideways onto the floor. Vimes stood up to help him, and then remembered just in time about politics. He forced himself to back away, hands in the air. Mr. Bashfulson, he said, I can't touch him, please. The Grag nodded and knelt down by the dwarf. No pulse, no heartbeat, he announced after a few seconds. I'm sorry, Commander. Then it looks as though I'm now in your hands, said Vimes. Indeed, in the hands of the dwarf, said the Grag, standing up. Commander Vimes, I will swear that Helmclover was treated with nothing but concern and courtesy while I was here, and perhaps with more kindness from you than a dwarf might have a right to expect. His death is not on your hands. The summoning dart calls him. Dwarfs will understand. Well, I don't. Why'd it kill him? What did the poor bugger do? I think it's more true to say that the fear of the summoning dart killed him, said the Grag. He left a miner trapped. Heard his cries in the dark, and did nothing. To all dwarfs, that is a terrible crime. As bad as wiping away a word, said Vimes, sourly. He felt more shaken up than he'd care to admit. He shouldn't have slapped the table like that, but he'd been so angry. Now his hand hurt more than ever. Some would say it is far worse. His own guilt and fear killed Helmclover. It's as if he had his own summoning dark in his head, said Bashfulson. In a way, perhaps we all have, Commander, or something similar. You know, your religion really messes people up, said Vimes. Not in comparison to what they do to one another, said Bashfulson, calmly folding the dead dwarf's hands across his chest. And it is not a religion, Commander. Tak wrote the word in the laws, and then he left us. He does not require that we think of him, only that we think. He stood up. I shall explain the situation to my fellows. Commander. Incidentally, I would ask you to take me with you to Coon Valley. Did I say I was going to Coon Valley? Said Vimes. All right, said the guard calmly. Let's say, then, that should the mood take you to go to Coon Valley, you'll take me. I know the place. I know the history. I even know quite a lot about Mindsign, especially the major darknesses. I may be useful. You demand all that just for telling the truth, said Vimes. As a matter of fact, no. Just as factus. I bargain with no axe in my hand. I will tell the truth whatever you decide, said Bashelson. However, since you are not going to Coon Valley, Commander, I will not press you. It was only an idle thought. Fun. What is it good for? It's not pleasure, joy, delight, enjoyment, or glee. It's a hollow, cruel, vicious little bastard, a word for something sought with a hilarious couple of wobbly antennae on your head, and the words, I want it, on your shirt, and it tends to leave you waking up with your face stuck to the street. Somehow, Angua had acquired a magenta feather boa. It wasn't her. It wasn't meant anyone. It had just turned up. The sheer fakery of it made her more gloomy. Something was nagging at the back of her mind, and it annoyed her that she didn't know what it was. They had ended up in Beers, as she knew they would. It was the Undead Bar, although it tolerated anyone who wasn't too normal. It certainly tolerated Tani. She just didn't get it, did she? The reason why men never talked to her? The trouble was, thought Angua, that Nobby wasn't actually a bad person. As such, as far as she knew, she'd always been faithful to Miss Pushpram. He'd always been faithful to Miss Pushpram, which was to say that when it came to being hit with a fish and then pelted with clams, he never thought of any other girl but her. He actually had quite a romantic soul, but it was encased in what could only be called Nobby Knobs. Sally had accompanied Tawny to the ladies, which was always wise in Beers. Now Angua was staring at yet another cocktail menu, painted on a board above the bar in a very shaky script, by Igor. Who wasn't an Igor, but was merely called one. It was best not to have fun with him on this subject, especially not to ask him how him to sew your head back on. He's done his best to flow with the zeitgeist, or would have done if he'd known what the word meant, but had totally failed to grasp the subtleties of the modern cocktail bar, so that the drinks on offer included having your teeth smashed in by a big stinky fist, head nailed to the door, kicking a fork, like big lump of steel hammer, through your ears, neck bolt. Actually, the neck bolt wasn't too bad, Angua had to admit. Excuse me, said Aunt Cherry, teetering on a bar stool. But what was all that about Tawny? I could see you and Sally nodding to each other. That? Oh, it's the jerk syndrome, Angua remembered who she was talking to and added. Dwarfs probably don't have that. It means sometimes women are so beautiful that any man with a half a brain isn't going to think of asking her out, okay? Because it's obvious that she's far too grand for the likes of him. Are you with me? I think so. Well, that's Tawny. And for the purposes of this explanation, Nobby has not got half a brain. He's so used to women saying no when he asks them out that he's not afraid of being blown off. So he asks her, because he figures why not. And she, who by now thinks there's something wrong with her, is so grateful she says okay. But she likes him. I know. That's where it all gets strange. It's much simpler for dwarfs, said Cherry. I expect it is. But probably not as much fun, said Cherry, looking crestfallen. Tawny was returning. Angua ordered 3 neck bolts, while Cherry hopefully negotiated for a screaming orgasm. Patience is a key virtue among dwarfs. And then, with occasional assistance from Sally, Angua explained to Tawny the facts of, well, everything. It took some while. You had to keep changing the shape of sentences to get them to fit into the currently available space in Tawny's brain. Angua clung to the idea, though. The girl couldn't be that stupid. She worked in a strip club, didn't she? I mean, why do you think men pay to watch you on stage? She asked. Because I'm very good, said Tawny promptly. When I was 10, I got the Dancer of the Year award in Miss Devion's ballet and tap class. Tap dancing, said Sally, grinning. Hey, why don't you try that on stage? Angua closed her mind to the image of Tawny tap dancing. The club would probably burn to the ground. Let me try this another way, she said. And I'm telling you this as another woman, female. Tawny listened intently, and even the way in which she looked puzzled was unfair to the rest of her sex. When Angua had finished, she watched the angelic expression, hopefully. So what you're saying, right, said Tawny, is that walking out with Nobby is like going into a big posh restaurant and only eating the bread roll? Exactly, said Angua. You've got it. But I never really meet men. Granny told me not to act like a floozy. And you don't think that working out Angua began, but Sally cut in. Sometimes you need to floose regularly, she said. Haven't you ever just gone into a bar and had a drink with a man? No. Right, said Sally. She drained her glass. I don't like these neck bolts. Let's go somewhere else. And she paused. Open your mind to possibilities. It was odd having Sybil in Pseudopolis Yard. It had been one of the Ramkin family homes before she'd given it to the watch. She'd been a girl there. It had been her home. Some apprehension of this crept into the chipped and stained souls of the watchmen. Men not known for the elegance of their manners found themselves automatically wiping their feet as they came in, and respectfully removing their helmets. They spoke differently, too, slowly and hesitantly, anxiously scanning the sentence ahead for expletives to delete. Someone even found a broom and swept up, or at least moved the dirt to a less obvious place. Upstairs, in what had been, up until then, the cash office, young Sam slept peacefully in a makeshift bed. One day, Vimes hoped he would be able to tell him that on one special night, he'd been guarded by 4 troll watchmen. They'd been off duty, but volunteered to come in for this, and they were just itching for some dwarfs to try anything. Sam hoped the boy would be impressed. The most other kids could hope for was angels. Vimes had commandeered the canteen because it had a big enough table. He'd spread out a map of the city. A lot of the rest of the planking was occupied by pages from the Coon Valley Codex. This wasn't a game. This was a puzzle. A sort of, yes, a jigsaw puzzle. And he ought to be able to do it, he reasoned, because he already had nearly all the corners. Ettercap Street, Money Trap Lane, Crybaby Alley, Scuttlebutt Court, the GBs, Pellicool Steps, he said, tunnels everywhere. They were lucky to find it after only 3 or 4. Mr. Rascal must have had longings in half the streets in the area, including Empirical Crescent. But why, said Sir Reynold Stitched. I mean, why dig tunnels everywhere? Tell him, Carrot, said Vimes, drawing a line across the city. Carrot cleared his throat. Because they were dwarfs, sir. The deep downers at that, and deep downers at that, he said. It wouldn't occur to them not to dig, and mostly it'd be just a matter of clearing out buried rooms, in any case. That's a stroll to a dwarf. And they were laying rails, so they could take the spoil out anywhere they wanted. Yes, but Surlia, Sir Reynold began. They were listening out for something talking in the bottom of an old well, said Vimes, still bending over the map. What chance that'd still be visible? and people can get a bit iffy with a bunch of dwarfs when a bunch of dwarfs turn up and start digging holes in the garden. It would be very slow, Cerulea. Well, yes, but it would be in the dark, under their control. In secret, said Carrot. They could go anywhere they wanted. They could zigzag around if they weren't certain. They could home in with their listening tube, and they'd never have to speak to a human or see daylight. Dark, controllable, and secret. Deep downers in a nutshell, said Vimes. This is very exciting, said Sir Reynold. And they dug into the cellars of my museum? Over to you, Fred, said Vimes, carefully drawing a line across the map. Right, said Fred Cullen. Nobby and me found out where only a couple of hours ago, he said, thinking it wisest not to add, after Mr. Vimes yelled at us and made us tell him every last detail, and then sent us back and told us what to look for. What he did add was, they were pretty clever, sir. The mortar even looked dirty. I bet you're saying to yourself, aha, sir. I am, said Sir Reynold, bewildered. I would normally say, my goodness. I expect you're saying to yourself, aha, how were they able to build up the wall again after they got the mural out, sir? And we reckon, well, I imagine one dwarf stayed behind to make good lay low, as you would say, and wandered out in the morning, said Sir Reynold. There were people going in and out all the time. We were looking for a big painting, after all. Not a person. Yes, sir. We reckon one dwarf stayed behind to make good lay low and wandered out in the morning. There were people going in and out all the time. You were looking for a big painting, after all. Not a person, said Fred Cullen. He'd been very pleased to come up with that theory. So he was going to say it out loud, no matter what. Vimes tapped the map. And here, Sir Reynold, is where a troll called Brick fell through another cellar floor into their tunnel, he said. He also told us he saw something in the main mine, which sounds very much like the rascal. But alas, you have not found it, said Sir Reynold. I'm sorry, sir, it's probably long gone out of the city. But why, said the curator. They could have studied it in the museum. We're very interactive these days. Interactive, said Vimes. What do you mean? Well, people can look at the pictures as much as they want, said Sir Reynold. He sounded a little annoyed. People shouldn't ask that kind of question. And the pictures do what exactly? Hang there, Commander, said Sir Reynold. Of course. So, what you mean is, people can come and look at the pictures, and the pictures, for their part, are looked at? Rather like that, yes, said the curator. He thought for a moment, aware that this probably wasn't sufficient, and added, but dynamically, you mean the people are moved by the pictures, sir? Said Carrot. Yes, said Sir Reynold, with huge relief. Hold on, that's just what happens. And we've had the rascal on public display for years. We even have a stamp letter in case people want to see how the masters. Sometimes people come in with a bee in their bonnet that one of the warriors is pointing to some barely a visible cave or something. Frankly, if there was some secret, I would have found it by now. There was no point to the theft. Unless someone had found the secret and didn't want anyone else to find it, said Vimes. That would be rather a coincidence, wouldn't it, Commander? It's not that anything had just changed recently. Mr. Rascal didn't turn up and paint another mountain. And although I hate to say this, just destroying the painting would have been enough. Vimes walked around the table. All the bits, he thought. I must have all the bits by now. Let's start with the legend of a dwarf turning up, nearly dead, weeks after the battle, babbling about treasure. All right, so then it means it might have been this talking cube thing, Vimes thought. He surely survived the battle, hid out somewhere, And he's got this thing, and it's important. He's got to get it somewhere safe. No, maybe he's got to get people to listen to it. And, of course, he doesn't take it with him. Because there's still likely to be trolls wandering the area, and right now, they'll be in a good mood to club first and try to think up some questions later. He needed some bodyguards.